Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I get confused sometimes. Aaron, we're here to do our season three, I guess, series wrap up for Picard. I hear we have a pretty bulging feedback mailbag.
We do.
Is true?
We have Enterprise D size nacelles of feedback. I also want to say that because a lot of times when we're ending coverage of a show, I'm not exactly sure what I should tell people to follow us on next. But here the clear answer is Star Trek Strange New Worlds is coming back. We quite like the first season. We don't have public facing coverage, but we were talking about it quite a bit on our premium show Off the Clock. We're very excited. This is like we were very skeptical about this show. You know, it promises to be the return to old Star Trek where they go to a new planet each week and get in some philosophical and moral quandaries that they have to solve. But I'll be damned. Season one of Star Trek Strange New Worlds was pretty much classic Star Trek.
Yeah, no, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I like the new captain.
I do, yeah. I like everything about it. I'm very, except for maybe they're having a little bit too much fun with Spock's sex life.
Yeah, I got to think that's mostly over though. Season one, they got a lot of their system. Season two, maybe less Spock sex.
Star Trek's always been a little horny, so I can forgive that. But if that's the greatest flaw of the show, it's not so bad. So that's coming back.
It was
June
the boring
15th.
Kind of horny is the problem. Like I'm okay with the exciting horny. It's the boring
some
horny.
Some Ponfar
do it.
Fucking we could get down with, but there's they just didn't quite know what to do with it. Star Trek: Strange New Worlds returns to Paramount Plus June 15th, 2023, and we aim to give it weekly coverage. So if you like Picard, I can't imagine you not liking Strange New Worlds. Check it out. You can see the whole thing on Paramount Lite right now, season one, and then we'll be back again June 15th for season two. Any other thoughts we have for just kind of general wrap-up, organic? Let's get to the...
I bet we'll come across them in the feedback.
See what the lower decks have to say, shall we? Colin from Hamburg says, hope this isn't dry pie, but I wanted to get in on the USS New Jersey. I went through and I looked for some things that might be some mistakes or some interesting behind the scenes that we might have missed. Because, like I said, we haven't done feedback all season long. Says the whole reason that the USS New Jersey, which you'll recall is like, man, I don't recall the New Jersey being like a storage ship or whatever.
Yeah.
The whole reason is it's in a show as a deep cut from The Next Generation. In the episode Relics, which you'll remember is where they've discovered Scotty marooned on a Dyson sphere. Picard says he's familiar with the Constitution class starships because he saw the USS New Jersey at the Starfleet Fleet Museum. Boom. Okay. There was the USS New Jersey. When the Fleet Museum was shown, it's there. But there's actually more depth to it than that. You were also asking where they got the 1701A. Oh, there's actually no more depth to it than that. You're also asking where they got the 1701A. The A was the starship that arrived at the end of Star Trek VI. It was a replacement for the one that went down over SETI Alpha 5 in Star Trek III. Since we never saw its destruction and Star Trek Generation showed the launching of the new 1701B, the fucking Excelsior class, it makes sense that maybe the A was just retired and put in the Fleet Museum. So here's the interesting thing, Colin. I know that. I know that in a very deep way. I was like a subscriber to Starlog magazine, and there was a whole article about the new NCC 1701 and what ship it might have gotten, you know, what ship it might have gotten re-registered under and all this other stuff. And I can't believe I got that wrong. I hypothesize that in the copy that we got, the screener copy, that it did say NCC 1701 without the A. And they corrected that in the broadcast, but I can't go back because like we only get to see the screeners for a set amount of time and those have already expired. So I either had a massive brain fart or there's they cleaned up the texture of the hull. You can decide. You can decide which one is better. But like I would hate for people to think that the NCC, I don't know. I don't even know. Like this is such a minute Trek thing, but I got offended that I got it wrong, is what I'm saying, Colin.
Offended yourself.
I fucking outplayed myself. Sarah said, I wanted to take a second to try to clear up some of the confusion about the ending of Deep Space Nine and what happened to the Changelings. Remember, we were confused about, it seemed like they were retconning that Starfleet didn't want to give them and it was accidentally given and was stolen. You know, we had that kind of question about how did the founders get cured? Hmm. In season four of Deep Space Nine, Odo visits Earth with Sisko, where he's infected with the morphogenic virus. And in hopes of if he communicates with the founders again, it will spread to them. In season seven, when the virus is discovered, it's Dr. Bashir who figures out in Section 31 infected Odo with the virus and demands that he get the cure so he can cure Odo. Starfleet denies the request, saying they're afraid the cure could fall into the hands of the founders. And the higher-ups of Starfleet Medical deny Bashir's request for any files on Odo. Bashir uses Sisko to request information as he has a security clearance required to access the information, but Section 31 sends over only the data that Dr. Bashir had sent to them prior to Odo being infected. The bamboozle doesn't work, so Bashir, knowing that Section 31 is determined to not let the cure fall into the hands of Dominion, works with O'Brien to lure Sloan, an agent from Section 31 that's been trying to recruit Bashir through three seasons, I remember that one, by pretending he has come up with the cure for the morphogenic virus. Sloan comes to visit Bashir, where he is captured by Bashir and O'Brien using force fields, and ultimately they inception him and get the information needed to create the cure. Bashir obviously provides a cure to Odo, and in the finale, Odo himself is the one that provides a cure against the wishes of Starfleet to the Founders on the condition that the female changeling who's been heading up the war against the Alpha Quadrant stand trial and face consequences for the actions of the Founders. She agrees and is taken off to stand trial. Odo provides a cure to the Great Link and it heals his people. So as the backstory, Starfleet is terrified they'd not be able to beat the Founders and were comfortable enough to allow the genocide of the Changelings have ended the Dominion War. I thought this was interesting. I really hated that female Founder when I was a kid. But thinking back, it's kind of... This is a very morally gray ending to the Dominion War, which really fits Deep Space Nine, because they are holding a collective, they're holding an individual and a collective species uniquely responsible for this war. And it seems like that Starfleet's reckoning, like, honestly, we should put you all on trial, but we can't. So we're going to give one like scapegoat, a sacrificial goat, so we can bring you all in at some point in the future.
Hmm.
Because somebody's got to take the fall for it.
For sure. And DS9 was always better about, you know, those complex moral gray areas. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, definitely, like, I'm not... I understand why you hated that changeling, because they are,
yeah, she's
like...
the chief antagonist and such a terrible being.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the only reason the war is happening is because they want to conconquer, you know, that's it. Mm-hmm. And sure, you can say, oh, well, they have this sad backstory where they're all, you know, misunderstood.
Everybody's got damage, brother.
Yeah. That doesn't mean you could take it out on everybody else. So,
yeah. And then also it clears up because, like, it seems like from the Federation's perspective, that they let it slip that they just beneficently. Let the Founders have the cure when they're on the brink of death, when mm-hmm. reality is what actually happened in Deep Space Nine. So Picard thinks the cover story is true, that, like, oh, well, we also gave you the cure. No, you didn't. It was stolen, you asshole. Mm-hmm. So thanks for clearing that up for us, Sarah. Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to the Podcast Maneuver. Giovanna's up next says, as nice it was to see Tuvok and Ro, I'm kind of bummed that the Deep Space Nine characters aren't getting the same kind of love. The plot was a central focus of the last several seasons of Deep Space Nine, but they're bringing back cameos from every season series but them. Renee has passed away, but Bashir, O'Brien, even Garrick would have been perfect. Deep Space Nine was always the middle child of Star Trek, and it shows. I want to talk about this first.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Worf, which isn't nothing. This is a little bit of Worf erasure, but he's also the TNG guy.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, they reverse engineered their way into a DS9 cameo with Worf because he happened to also be on DS9.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't know that I actually think that they would have been open to having some Deep Space Nine cameos. I mean, they did kind of have Odo had a little bit of a Deep Space Nine cameo. He was not named, but heavily implied to be the source that was feeding Worf information about this offshoot of the Founders. I have been watching a lot of behind-the-scenes Star Trek stuff because it's like, you know, TikTok, it starts figuring out what you like, and I started watching a whole bunch of, like, cast interviews with Jonathan Frakes and, you know, Brent Spiner, and it just keeps, and I keep on getting to, like, people telling stories about Deep Space Nine, and it just seems like Deep Space Nine wasn't a very happy show. A lot of the crew had a lot of the same conflicts the TNG cast. There was a lot of sexism, there was a lot of, like, favoritism, there was a lot of people unhappy with their roles. But for whatever reason, the Next Generation crew just had a ball working. Like, even when things were going bad, they were laughing, they were having a good time, they supported each other in a way that the Deep Space Nine cast doesn't seem like they did. And Avery Brooks, especially, I don't think, wants to have anything to do with it for whatever, you know, reason. And, like, Terry, what's...
Pharrell?
Pharrell left under very bad circumstances. Nana Visitor hated the show, hated Rick Berman. Like, you can maybe get Quark,
Armin Shimerman, sure.
I don't know. I don't know how Bashir.
Alexander Siddig, if you believe later credits of
He's got many, many names. I actually think that I don't think that the majority of the Deep Space Nine cast wants anything to do with Star Trek. And it's if you look at their con appearances, you never see like the full bridge crew of Deep Space Nine appearing together. It's always like Nana Visitor or Arm. Yeah, it's never like they'll get Jake, the actor who played Jake, but there's never any of like the full crew, or at least that's my impression. So I actually think it's like. It's just hard to get that crew back together.
It's amazing too, because the chemistry is as good as anything on TNG between the actors, like on screen.
The on screen stuff sings. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is it though. Like it was not the storied friendship that everyone on TNG had. And so it's just hard to get those people together to agree to do things. Yeah. But I mean, they didn't really do it with Voyager much here, right? You've got Tuvok and Seven,
course, is like, a main character, and she, you know, like, and they reference Janeway, Admiral Janeway.
Yeah, but they don't get Kate Mulgrew back, right. So, like, I imagine, look, these are all actors who have done other things and probably don't want to be known just for Star Trek in most cases. But yeah, I mean, you get who you can get.
And maybe Star Trek was a little bit more special, the Next Generation, because it was the first one that kind of came back, and it was messy and things changed a lot and the actors had a lot of power. Whereas maybe in Deep Space Nine, these others were kind of a machine, you know, like they had already had, and they like it was actors like, you know, coming into an established thing. And like, but I don't know. I think it was the personalities involved too, and the way those things were handled. So. Because like otherwise, yeah, this did feel like a really nice send off for all. Like this was kind of like they're crossing all T's. Like they were even given DAP to Enterprise, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. I didn't feel like I needed any Voyager in my farewell to Picard. I feel like if they're
Voyager
gonna
fans.
Sure, but I also feel like I didn't need DS9, and I'm a big DS9 fan. So if they were gonna do DS9 stuff, I wanted it to be in another show with a character from DS9, right?
That's what because you could make it, well, this is the TNG show. But the thing is they kind of weakened that by having so many homages to the other. It did feel like a general, like, Star Trek celebration.
I agree, which I don't think it should have been. I think it should have been just a celebration of Picard and his crew.
Giovanna continues, I was so upset that they killed Shaw. I was hoping for some spinoff action from him. They can't, look, they can spin him off. We talked about it.
Uh-huh, positronic bodies.
The Daystrom black site can have his corpse stored and freeze-dry. Like, we got that. Although, flipping the keys to Seven feels pretty definitive.
Yeah, it would really undercut the emotional punch of that scene if he just comes back.
And takes the Titan back over, yeah.
Or even if he doesn't, even if he's just alive. Like, his dying words, his posthumous words here are this, and then they bring him back?
Yeah. She says also someone needs to start a hashtag justice for Alexander campaign because Wesley's getting shout outs, but everyone's completely forgotten that Worf has a kid too.
Uh-huh.
This is very true,
right? I mean, Worf leaves him. So I just got to the Worf episode, the first Worf episode of DS9. He left Alexander with his grandparents, apparently. Right. I don't know if that is still true at the end of DS9, but I assume.
I'm kind of curious to see if they did. They ever Alexander never visited Deep Space Nine, if I recall correct.
I don't remember him on it, but I couldn't swear.
Yeah. Also, there's a third season episode of The Next Generation where Worf takes an orphan into his family, like does this Klingon honor ceremony, and that never went anywhere either. Like, is Worf like a big deadbeat galactic deadbeat dad?
Yeah. Yeah.
He likes making them. We don't like taking care of them, but maybe the Roshinkos, is that what their name is? The Roshinkos are just such great natural parents, and they're so good at it. The Worf's just like, fuck it, I'm a mess.
Yeah, have all my kids.
In the end, Giovanna says, I had a nostalgia boner the entire time. 14-year-old me has never been happier. The plot's kind of crazy if you ask too many questions, but I loved it anyway. That's the key. Mm-hmm. That's never not been true. Like, show me a Star Trek series that's not crazy, go cocoa nuts. If you really start breaking down the techno babble and the plots,
oh yeah.
Wayne says, it feels like the writer's room is intent on adding as much nostalgia this season as possible. I wonder if they'll find a way to bring Q back to snap the Borg away, much like he was the one to introduce humanity to them. Now, you did get full credits, but this came out around episode 7, and I gotta give you some, because mm-hmm. I would have bet heavily against Q coming back.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything of consequence, but he sets up a potential future.
And you got them in the most dramatic way possible. You won them in a post-credit mm-hmm. series sequence. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Todd talks about the Borg biological virus. He goes, it's not that crazy if you think about it. It's actually just a continuation of this thread. And he linked me to a Memory Alpha article called Nanoprobe Virus. He says the history is definitely there for the Borg playing the slow game to finally meet their end game. Teaming up with changelings, that's the part that doesn't track for me. I read this article, and there's a section here that says the nanoprobe virus was a technology developed by the Borg Queen in the year 2375 as a way to gradually assimilate the human race after the failure of two direct attempts. The plan involved detonating a biogenic charge in Earth's atmosphere, upon which the virus would begin to infect all life forms, primarily species 5618. Humans. The process of assimilation would be so gradual that half the planet's population would be turned into drones by the time anyone realized what was happening. The Borg Queen revealed the plan to an abducted 7 of 9 and ordered her to perform to reprogram the nanoprobes, but due to her knowledge of humans. However, 7 refused. This is from Voyager Dark Frontier. So, apparently, this has been an invasion plan the Borg have been working on since mid-seasons of Voyager.
Due to her knowledge of humans, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
You're telling me they've never assimilated a single human aside from 7 of 9 and look cute as a Borg?
Yeah, but her unique understanding of humanity, which she barely had. Yeah, well, you know, Voyager.
That's dumb. That's dumb. Anyway, yeah, you're
I appreciate
right.
I appreciate you cluing us into that, Todd. That's a nice mm-hmm. little touch. Craig from the UK says, I gotta gush about that last 10 minutes of episode 6. I don't care if it's contrived. I don't care if it didn't quite live up to the hype. But my God, I was on the edge of my seat with tears in my eyes, feeling like a kid again. In the last 10 seconds, best 10 seconds of my life, I saw my first love again, and she was beautiful. Craig, this is beautiful. It's also a little sad. But I feel you, so I'm right there with you.
What is the end of episode 6?
No, 9. It's when the Enterprise is revealed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you said 6. I was very confused. But yes.
Did I? Yes, God damn it. That's a wild type of dyslexia to just transpose a number vertically like that. Brian wanted to share two quick things. First, in retrospect, the credits have been flashing the Borg all season long with their First Contact soundtrack. True. Mm-hmm. True. We were completely off the Borg scent, though. In addition to Allison Pill being involved in the finale, it would also make sense that the remainder of your Romulan fleet sent by Sela would arrive to assist. So, do you remember who Sela is?
No.
Sela is the half-Romulan, half-human spawn of alternate dimension Tasha Yar.
Okay.
The blonde Romulan mm-hmm. Tasha Yar. There was a lot of theories involving the return of Sela because, you know, Picard has been about the Romulans as much as it's been about anything over its mm-hmm. 3 seasons. And if they had the Romulans coming in to kind of like save the Federation, that this would kind of like bring them into the fold the same way that the Klingons were brought into the fold in the TNG era. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of surprised they didn't do anything with that.
Yeah. Seems a natural conclusion considering what Picard was doing with the Romulans in season 1. He was
trying
to save them.
I wonder if Denise Crosby's like, nah, fuck you. I got my Walking Dead residuals now. I don't need you.
Yeah. I don't know. Because
they fucking did her
dirty.
Uh-huh. But she was willing to come back for many, many episodes. She guest appeared on the episode where presumably she mothered Sela, and then she came back as Sela for many episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get it. John G says, I didn't love this season of Picard the way you guys and so many seem to. It's clearly leaps and bounds better than the previous seasons, but as much as I enjoy some things in it, for example, Worf, I can't quite click with it. However, I just want to say several times in this season, Jim has turned me around on particular scenes. I don't know what he's doing. He's literally just describing the same scenes as I watch, but seeing it through his eyes, the way he's describing it, I'm bumping scenes up a whole letter grade. Things I didn't like at first. What is this magic, Jim? What magic do you possess?
I don't know. I wish I knew because I would harness it better and I would do that every scene. But I feel like maybe it's my natural love for these characters and my willingness to overlook some of the sillier stuff in some of these scenes in favor of the nostalgia that is helping.
It's the nostalgia goggles for sure. And maybe, John, you want to see it that way, but you can't quite because you're just a little bit more grown up and calcified than Jim is and I am. But like, we are able to, just in the same way that like sometimes I can access the purity of my youth through seeing my son experience things, like when he was a little kid. Like, maybe we're the little kids that allow you to experience your authentic Trek love.
And, I mean, the stated mission of our podcasts, our, 15-year mission at this point, is to just be there to talk with you about TV shows like your friends would. And so maybe, like, when you're watching it, you're not feeling it quite as much, but when you sit down and you talk with your friends, a.k.a. us, now suddenly it hits a little bit better, right?
Oh, that used to happen all the time when I'd go, when we'd go out with our friends to see a movie. Sometimes I didn't, you know, I wasn't, or it would either cement my position or it would undermine and influence my position to hear everybody else. So,
sure.
Todd has a thought regarding line of sight propagation. Yeah, it's dumb, it's stupid, but honestly, there's a far simpler way to accomplish breaking the Titan out of the Borg network, and I'm shocked they didn't lean into the solution at least once, because there are a number of occasions it could have been used to solve a number of plot twists. You see, Seven of Nine still has functional assimilation tubules. Ooh, wow.
Tubules.
Okay. Yeah.
That sounds dirty.
And over the course of her run on Voyager, she's used those tubules in a number of occasions to astromech her way out of problems for herself or the ship. Those are those kind of wrist fangs that they introduced the Borg having in First Contact. The breakout of the Borg network, I was fully expecting her to walk over the ops console, inject her tubules into it, and through the magic of her nanoprobes, override the network control while still giving the illusion that they were integrated. Doing so would no doubt lead to surprise looks from the ragtag crew, in which she could quip something to the effect of hardware over software, but the effects are temporary. Who knows how long before they adapt, bring up the prefix codes, blah, blah, blah. Literally anything would have been better than line of sight propagation. Did they sometimes forget that Seven actually is still in many ways a Borg?
Maybe. It's hard to forget given the look of her face, but...
Yeah, and her hand...
In her hand, yeah, but I guess.
I want to say that there was something in the first season where they mentioned that she had gone through a little bit more deborgification and maybe they had taken some of these abilities away, but that's just something teasing the back of my mind. I tried to look to see if I could substantiate that while I was doing research for the feedback, but I thought it was weird that she doesn't have a little bit of Picard's being able to hear the Borg kind of whisper effects that he seems to have. But then again, they also showed that they uniquely fucked with Picard in a way they apparently don't do any other human drone. So, Steve J says, is it just me or was I the only one who thought the shuttlecraft at the end was going to come up over the bow of a newly christened USS Picard? Seemed like we're far enough through the alphabet the Enterprise name can be retired. I don't know about that. Seems like you should always have an Enterprise in Star Trek, but I kind of thought a USS Picard would be the way this ends too. How you end Picard the series.
Yeah. I mean, he's already a machine. Just turn him into a starship.
Is it a thing in the Navy where they will christen a ship of a living person?
Oh, I don't know. All the names I'm trying to think of like...
Yeah, like the Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, those guys were all dead when they were built and certainly christened. Is there something about like you can't name a ship after a living person? I would think that would be a good, because like how do you know they're not going to disgrace themselves?
Sure. Sure.
Like, the Continental Army, Navy might have been really hot to have a USS Benedict Arnold, mm-hmm. but, oh, that would have not looked good in hindsight.
Could be.
I thought that would have been a good way to end things, too, but maybe that's the deal.
Shields up. Here come the ads. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the Podcast Maneuver.
Jim from Naples says, come some questions. What happened to the Jurati Borg? Were they just in a different timeline or just irrelevant? From my research, and I did not get this at all from watching the series, but we were intended to understand that Jurati was leading a splinter faction of the Borg that were stranded interdimensionally during the Q time fuck shift thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and that these Borg went back to the 21st century and quote unquote stayed out of the way of history, which is, I think, a quote for what Riker had for what the plans that they were going to do, what the crew of the Enterprise were going to do on Earth in First Contact.
It's if very they were able to... un-Borg-like, but okay.
Yeah, they're just going to go out and live out away from history. And then they got a new queen of the Jurati. But there are now two separate factions of Borg, if not more. The Jurati faction, led by the Jurati Borg queen, and the classic Borg queen, led by Alex Krieg. So,
yeah, and the Krieg ones are destroyed, and the Jurati ones are still out there, but hopefully, like, changed enough that they won't be a huge problem.
Yeah. Wasn't the changeling Borg connection rather tenuous? The Founders and Baddock seem like they are set up as the big baddies and dropped about 2/3 through the season. I don't know how gracefully they did this, but this is a very... I thought they did enough to tell the story for me that you had this bioweapons essentially built by the Federation and were tortured and conditioned to hate the Federation, and that they would do anything to take it down, even hooking up with something that's antithetical to their way of life, the Borg. And then the Borg just betrayed, like, they were just using them all along, so they didn't care that the Founders died. Oh, the person that Vedic was talking to this whole time was the Borg Queen. That's gotta be. Because now I'm thinking about what that fucked up Founder face looked like. If you think about what the Borg Queen looked like, her skeletal face, it's very similar to that. So the Borg Queen has been the big bad the entire time.
I guess so.
So this is like Palpatine using who was Christopher Lee, Dooku.
Dooku. Mm-hmm.
Like, just like all along, it like he did, like, if Dooku lived and defeated Anakin, then he's the best apprentice. If he dies and Anakin, then it's like he doesn't care either way. Like, I think that's how you got to think about the Borg field. And I think that they did enough to tell the story of the Founders being so desperate and so hurt that they would do anything. They would get in bed with the Scorpion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'll have to go back and look at that face and see if I think it's Borgish.
Yeah.
If not, it could just be like they're working with, you know, part of the faction of the Founders that wants the Federation destroyed that we haven't dealt with fully, you know, and it's going to go on to another series of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's a shame we're going to have a wrap-up podcast where we get to the bottom of this, but that's my thought. Maybe we can talk about it on Discord or the forums. Tuvok was killed. Oh, no, so sad. Just kidding. Your thoughts? I'm not a big Voyager fan, so I didn't feel jerked around.
No.
Tuvok's death didn't feel like a big death to me.
Nope.
Is that crazy?
Nope. I'm not a Voyager fan either. I couldn't care less.
Yeah, so...
He's on the same level as, like, a Raffi to me, honestly.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, like, who is the equivalent, like, Rom?
I like Rom more, yeah. Then I like Tuvok by far.
Yeah, same. I was trying to think of like anyone on Deep Space Nine that is at the level of Tuvok, and I'm like, God damn, like, yeah, I don't like anybody on the Voyager crew. I never felt affection for any of those fuckers,
and that's why I stopped watching it ultimately.
Exactly,
because they didn't have that repertoire between the characters.
I stuck through well into season 3, and it's just like, because I was kind of my whole deal is like, yeah, Star Trek's take a while to gel, and they just never gelled, man. It's like they had all these great concepts of like, oh, Maquis, and he's a Native American, and you got a fucking hedgehog with a hot wife, and you got the first female captain,
and
it's
wife.
Just like and a half human, half the Klingons. Like a lot of that, I don't know. Like,
who is the hedgehog? Is Neelix a hedgehog?
Neelix, yeah.
Okay, sure. He's got that mohawk.
And then they killed
his
hot wife, and I'm like, who the fuck cares? So like, yeah, I don't. I never gelled with the Voyager crew.
Yep, same here. Except for Robert Picardo. I loved Robert Picardo in that show, but he stood alone. He was...
Oh, right. The Doctor was the best part.
The MH. Yeah, he was fantastic, and I would love to see him in more stuff, but everybody else I could take or leave.
And I don't think they ever knew what to do with him either, because they kept on, there's like, I think they tried to ship him with everybody in the show, and just like, they clearly had like, yeah, he's kind of like, him and Seven were the breakout hits, but great thought about Tuvok and Seven. We only spent 7 years in Deep Space together, and who are you again? We got no Sisko, no Janeway. I guess I don't think you're ever going to see Avery Brooks. He refused to participate in the documentary on the Deep Space Nine. I don't know what his deal, whether like, I need to look in this more, because like, I know Avery Brooks is a very politically involved man. He had a very distinct thought about his role and his position as a black actor in the 90s and changing, you know, stereotypes and how people perceive like black men and black fathers in particular. But I don't think he had any affection for the material. And he was like a perfect, like he would clock in, do the job. And I don't know if he has an animosity or if it's just like, he thinks it's like, hey, yeah, I cared about showing a strong relationship between a black man and his son. And I did that and everything else can go fuck off. I don't know. But like, I just know that he is not ever in any of this shit.
And I feel like they lose that thread of his character more as they go into the later seasons. Like it becomes less prominent. And so I can see him like becoming maybe resentful of the work, because it's very apparent early on in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It's very apparent early on in Deep Space Nine that that Avery Brooks is being reined in by the directors. Like, he's giving a performance that says, I want to do more with this. And it's,
yeah,
I don't always think it's appropriate. It's a lot of weird decisions in my mind.
It's very bombastic, yeah.
But he wants to do something more. And by season three, it seems like they have broken him and he is Captain Sisko. And I think it works better when he is playing Captain Sisko than when he is trying to be Avery Brooks in this character. But I could see him being dissatisfied with that.
Interesting. I thought you were saying that they went away with that, because like, I thought the Jake and Sisko stuff always worked really well, and like, Jake turned into like his own man, you know, like
a
pretty good one. So it's like yeah, they changed because he's no longer the father of a little boy, he's the father of a young man. But I honestly don't know. But like, I would have bet money that Sisko doesn't appear at the beginning of the season if you'd said that there was money on the line. Jay from Rhode Island says, wouldn't the christening of the Enterprise G take away from the legacy of the Titan? Why wouldn't they just make a totally new ship into the Enterprise and allow for the Titan to continue to make its mark on the galaxy?
Telling you, man, I wanted to see a whole new class of ship for the next Enterprise.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, usually, like, they've done this before, like, the Defiant was destroyed in Deep Space Nine, and they got a new Defiant. It was the USS San Pablo, which is funny. They're sand pebbles. Was there an episode of Deep Space Nine called Sand Pebbles where they made?
I bet
they made light of that. There has to be.
I bet there is. Yeah.
Now that we just last week reviewed that the Sand Pebbles movie,
where they've got like the Jim Hadar as crew members keeping the engines running or something.
No, it'd have to be Ferengi. They'd have to hire the Ferengi. Oh, they're the local help. Yeah, that's funny. I don't know. Like it's always is what is the legacy of the Titan? It's Riker's ship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a fairly modern legacy. I don't feel like it has like a legacy, you know, it's got like Riker, according to Lower Decks, Riker used to be the captain and we see him on the ship a couple times, but it's a couple times. It's not like there's this big history, storied adventures that it went on and stuff, but I don't know. I can see it being Riker's ship and being promoted to Enterprise makes that a little bit easier for me.
I could see Riker greasing the wheels. Like, I think Riker think it's really cool that his first command gets turned into the Enterprise later.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of think so too.
Yeah, I could see him thinking that's really fucking cool. Alex says the lack of book. There's a couple random points he had. The lack of bookending of the relationship with Laris in season three was jarring. A post-credit scene with them reuniting and him putting a picture of young Jack Crusher with Laris saying, tell me about your friend Jack Crusher. Could easily been done while still skipping to the second post-credit scene with Q as is. What's wild is that they had her in the beginning. They addressed the fact that her and Picard were together. And like, when they parted, it wasn't like, we're never going to see each other again, and I'm going to replace you with all my old friends. It was kind of like, do your thing and come back to me.
Yeah.
And they never, never.
And I think it's because they wanted that ending for Picard to be with his crew.
Right.
But you could have, I almost wish this had taken place on the Vineyard and that Laris had just been there with them. I would have accepted that. I didn't need it to be only the crew.
Yeah, because then you could see that, like, you know, Beverly and Picard are fine not together. They've had their lives and they're happy with their lives. It's, I don't know. It's, Laris has always been a mistake. I never, it's like this whole show is there, like, it, at its worst was them fishing around for something to make Picard relevant. Like, oh, I regret never loving anyone. Oh, I have mommy issues that are unresolved. Oh, what's my...
I regret never having
my
a
Jumanji
kid.
Sin- yeah. Yeah, it's like all these things that they were trying to figure out. And the thing that worked is, yeah, bringing back Beverly, them having a son, him figuring out that he now like has a new... again, I don't know that I buy it, but like it's yeah, well attested to that having kids changes people.
Sure.
So yeah, like I think this is the one thing that like doesn't fuck with my conception of Picard, because he is changing as a man. He's not the same person. He's literally changing. So I think they did Laris dirty, and I would feel madder about it, but the real thing is they shouldn't have done her at all.
You can say that about so many Picard characters.
True. Yeah. There should not be a Laris or Elnor entry on Memory Alpha. I'm sorry. It shouldn't.
Maybe not Soji. Definitely not Soji.
Ooh, Raffi, I don't know. Raffi showed me
some
stuff.
Have you come around on Raffi?
I kind of came around on old Snake Leaf.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I want her introducing introducing Picard to Worf to a bong.
Uh-huh, yep.
A warrior's device, he would say. Also, really, no way to include Whoopi in the final scene, given that she was around for season two.
Yeah.
That's another one. Like, I don't care if it cost $1 million to get Whoopi Goldberg to the set for one fucking hour of shooting. Like, all they needed is just her giving them side eye as she's cleaning a glass from the bar. Like, that would have been enough. That would have been perfect. And it kind of sucks I didn't get that. Finally, I think 7 of 9's catchphrase should be comply.
Comply.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Khan punching a new course. Come to Mark 314, bearing 73, warp 7. Comply.
Yeah. I can see it.
Isn't that what the navigator used to say to the kid on Flight of Navigator? Compliance.
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah. That phrase.
I haven't heard anything better. Let's put it that way, Alex. So we'll go with that. We'll see. I don't know. I'm kind of.
we will add your biological distinctiveness to our own. It's a bit of a mouthful, but.
I'm curious that this whole Star Trek legacy thing that they keep hinting at. I wish they could find a way to make it a reality, because I love the idea of a new Enterprise that has coincidental runnings in with all of the crew from the old series that are still alive, and they just continue to find a way to. And then you could give these really great send offs to Deep Space Nine and Voyager if you wanted to. Can make Avery Brooks a sweetheart Godfather deal that he can't refuse.
Yeah, fucking Chekhov is still alive. That's why I was kind of excited when I heard, you know, President Chekhov.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, are they going to have a Chekhov cameo in this? Because they could.
They could
He's
have.
Fucking
yeah.
old, but he's still alive.
Yeah. What Shatner, they got? William Shatner. God, you imagine if they got William Shatner. He's not dead.
No, hey, Kirk is dead. I don't.
They got his body?
You're right. They do have his body. Positronic Kirk.
They got Positronic Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Square off against Positronic Picard.
That would be hilarious. at the end of Strange New Worlds, you know, when Pike has his hideous premonition and he gets crippled and they're replaced. Like the last scene of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, I want to see 93-year-old William Shatner show up on the bridge in his gold uniform. his gold velour uniform, and just and no one, and everyone act like he's still like early 30s, young, and he just sits down and talks to they get a young DeForest Kelly. Mm-hmm. They get a young McCoy. They got the young Spock, and he just, it's like, that's it. That's just like, he just, yeah, that's, of course, Star Trek just keeps going on.
Uh-huh.
No explanation of why Kirk looks so fucking old.
Sure.
Well, we got it. Okay. We're picking up our new captain from, Javaron 5.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. He just is recovering from an aging retrovirus. Yeah. And in another week or two, he'll be back to normal, but he looks like he's a Terran of his in the mid 90s. And they pick him up. It's just fucking Bill Shatner.
His
gut
body
hanging
has
out.
Been ravaged by an aging virus.
He's inexplicably riding a horse because that's the only way Bill Shatner would come back to Star Trek if they let him ride a horse again. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you know.
And he gets to keep the horse after. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's got hit by a polyphasic virus that ages him and makes him inexplicably love horses. And you're going to pick it. He'll be fine in a week. By the time Star Trek Classic Season 1, Episode 1 starts, he'll be back to normal. But for now, he looks like he's 95 and he's riding a horse, okay?
Yeah.
I could totally get down with that.
I've seen weirder. For God's sake, the TNG crew devolved into slugs and reptiles and shit, so...
Yeah, Barclay turned into a spider. What the fuck common ancestor did humans have with a spider?
Barclay kind of makes sense.
I do say that I'm never sure if Star Trek did more to break me out of my religious thought or keep me in, because some of the things they had to say about evolution were just...
Yeah.
Honestly, the Bible's more believable, some of that stuff. Do you have anything else you want to say in terms of wrap up? Because we just got done with all of the relevant feedback.
I you know, ultimately Picard was a mild success. It's like every other Star Trek series. It took two seasons to find its footing. Those seasons were mostly garbage, and in season three, it found its stride, and I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I grew a beard. So I think ultimately, like, I'm fine with Picard existing. It didn't do damage too much to the old TV series, and I'll still be able to watch that and say, yeah, this is where Picard kind of ended for me if I want to. But then I can go and I can watch this third season and be like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I can't imagine watching any of the other seasons. Maybe the first and last episode of the first season, because I did quite like the moments where Picard is interacting with the de-aged Brent Spiner Data. Those are some really good scenes. But yeah, I agree. I don't know why. I mean, look, they couldn't have all been this season, right? You can't get the whole crew back every season. Although maybe
why not?
I don't know why you can't. Yeah,
do this. Yeah, season why couldn't they all been this and then, good? Yeah, they I could. Feeling, they absolutely could.
I have a feeling it's three or four of the 27 executive producers of this show not being involved in this season, being involved in the other season, and I'm going to be definitely have my ear to ground after that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they did no harm. The one thing I was afraid of, that they would fuck up something like about Picard's character that would just change the way I see him forever, or fuck up the universe like J.J. Abrams did and like split shit off into some crazy time. They didn't fuck up anyone's canon. And I think what they got up to in this last season was... You know, again, I can't expect I didn't ask my kid to sit down and watch this with me because I think he would see this as rightfully so pretty thin stuff. But boy, if you were a child of the 80s or 90s and if you like Star Trek, it was pretty easy to like this season. And the other delightful is like all the old cast and crew still got it, man.
Yeah.
Nobody embarrassed themselves showing up to the set. Like
absolutely
all the chemistry
not.
Is intact. All the
in
timing.
Fact, they made me appreciate them more. I think they've grown as actors. I think the stuff they did in TNG, with the exception of maybe Patrick Stewart, was not super impressive. It was good. It was enjoyable, but it wasn't impressive. And people like LeVar Burton, Gates McFadden, that really impressed me with what they could do in this season.
Yeah, I think LeVar Burton maybe has definitely grown and polished. I thought Gates, I always thought Gates McFadden was good. I always thought it's hard to criticize like Michael Dorn and Brent Spiner because like I can't even think of themselves outside of those performances.
Sure, sure.
And I don't know, like maybe you're I've always admired Jonathan Frakes. So I always thought he's a cool dude.
Yes. Yeah, he's great.
I've been falling down a hole of him telling all these great stories about like, you know, because there's just tons like these guys make so many con appearances and they have all these different stories and stuff they tell. And, you know, he's going to become a really good director, prolific director. I guess I was just really proud of all these guys. You know, yeah. They come back. They haven't lost a stop. They look great. They effortlessly embodied their roles. They knew they understood the assignment. I think they went a little too ham on Worf's comedy factor, but that didn't even really destroy it. So, yeah. Yeah. Kudos. I was high. I didn't think they could make this season. I honestly didn't. Even with the relatively good Strange New Worlds, I didn't think they could do it, and they did it. So there you go. Picard at baldmove.com is no longer going to be an email that's used. We'll probably come up with another one for Strange New Worlds. But I just want to reiterate that we are going to come back in June. That's only about 6 weeks away. To take on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. You got plenty of time to catch up. Just two episodes a week will get you caught up before the series premieres for season two. I highly encourage you to do that. But otherwise, yeah, we're still having fun with the... Speaking of being on Paramount Plus, Yellow Jackets. It's a cheap... It's like what is it, $1 a month to add Showtime to your Paramount Plus subscription?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Ridiculously
and,
cheap.
I think Yellow Jackets a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun with it. But yeah, hope that you see you guys for Star Trek Strange New Worlds in just a couple weeks. We'll be signing off. And then this is the feed that like we happen on. We're going to repurpose the Picard feed, the Picard maneuver feed into the Strange New Worlds feed. We'll give it a new name, probably have a new cover art and all that stuff, but you can just stay right here and enjoy it. What a deal. But yeah, I hope you guys make that continuing voyage with us. Or you find us some other point in the galaxy, Alpha Quadrant, Gamma Quadrant, Delta, wherever. But until that time, I am your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Live long and prosper.